We're learning about the outbreak of a strange disease late last year in the United States, about the same time everyone was worried about Ebola. Researchers still don't know what this polio-like disease was or whether it could strike again.
Just one of the science headlines we're exploring now with Gemma Tarlak, senior associate editor at Discover Magazine, based in Waukesha. She joins us every month to talk about the stories behind the science headlines. Gemma, welcome back.
Hey, always great to be with you.
Well, tell us about this strange and apparently new disease. What does it look like?
Yeah, well, it looks actually a lot like classic polio, which is why researchers are really scratching their heads. So a little bit of background. Between August and December of last year, more than 100 children in 34 states were affected. The average age was 8, and there were at least 13 more cases in Canada. And that doesn't count adults who were impacted by this. One person, one health practitioner says a quarter of their cases were adults. The weird thing is, well, let me give you the grim stat first. Two-thirds of the children counted have shown some improvement, but only two of them out of 100 have fully recovered, and one-third showed no improvement whatsoever, and some of them are, unfortunately, they're still on ventilators. So the stats are really scary, and they have no idea what this thing is. It looks very much like polio, but it's not polio. And so now researchers are trying to scramble and figure out, is it going to come back again this year? Where did it come from? Can we even develop a vaccine if we don't know what it is?
I remember this story amidst a lot of other disease-related news with Ebola, and it was a scary one. So moving forward, what do researchers do to try to pin down what it is and whether or not it's treatable with a vaccine?
Well, one thing they're looking at is another virus called enterovirus D68. And they're looking at that as a possible culprit because it's been found in some, not all, but in some of the respiratory secretions from the children who had the illness. And at the same time, it seems to be that where you find this enterovirus D68, you also find this mystery virus, which for now they're calling acute flaccid myelitis. So they're looking into, is it related to enterovirus D68? Does enterovirus D68 actually cause it? But they really can't move forward with a vaccine until they know what it is.
And are they expecting, the researchers, that this might come again, maybe the same time this year?
Yeah, that's actually the big fear, that, you know, with outbreaks, there's always a bit of randomness to them, but generally they do repeat themselves in the same seasonal cycles. So they thought, just like enterovirus D68, and actually just like classic polio, it tends to show up in the fall through the winter. So they're all kind of, you know, bracing themselves, hoping they're wrong. But many of them are really expecting it to come back.
Now, you said that adults were affected. It was often talked about in terms of children. Did adults have the same paralysis-like symptoms that kids did?
Yeah. As far as I know, the focus has really been on children just because they've been absolutely the majority. But as far as I know, the symptoms have been the same.
We're talking to Gemma Tarlak from Discover Magazine, our monthly check-in on some of the most interesting and compelling stories from the world of science. Well, now, Gemma, on a happier note, so you've got a story this month about the first art ever created. And this is not, we can't exactly call these even by humans. It's by some of our human, pre-human ancestors, right?
Well, it's not by Homo sapiens. It would have been by Homo erectus, who is kind of the precursor to modern humans. So it's pretty close on our family.
Human-ish,
tree, you know, it's kind of our grandpa, if you want to think about it that way.
So this is being built as the first art ever created. What is it like?
Well, don't get too excited. It's not something you're going to want to hang up on your wall. But it's got a really interesting backstory to it. A lot of folks who follow human evolution have heard of Java Man. That is a group of fossils found back in the 1880s in Indonesia. And they were kind of famous at the time, and we won't even get to the whole debate they stirred up then. But eventually, they were classified as Homo erectus. Now, fast forward a century and a half, almost, to the early decades of this century, and this grad student starts looking at the stuff that was found with these famous fossils. Not the fossils themselves, but shells and other items found with the Java Man fossil. And he finds these shells have all these weird kind of crisscross zigzag markings on them. And what I love about this story is that the researcher said, you know, the first thing I thought was it was some bored museum curator having some fun. I didn't think it could actually be that old. But he did a couple tests, a couple different ways of verifying that these marks were made 300 to 450,000 years ago. And that's way older than the previous sort of intentional marking that we've seen, hundreds of thousands of years older. So it's, you know, we have a beautiful photo, full-page photo, showing you the etchings, but it's not, you know, it's not going to be like Picasso or Monet or anything. So don't get too excited, but it's still really cool.
Well, don't we originally, we usually think of the oldest art as being found in cave paintings and in France and Spain. How big a game changer is this that this is in Indonesia?
Well, a couple neat things to keep in mind. There have been older engravings, much older than the cave art that you're talking about in France. So this shell is much older than those oldest engravings, which are actually from South Africa. But, you know, cave art, I think, is the way a lot of us think as kind of the first human art. And there's some art before that, like the shell and you know, the etchings in South Africa. But yeah, cave art is kind of what we look at and really appreciate as art. And they thought it started about 35,000 years ago in Europe, and there are a lot of folks who think it may have had something to do with like a random mutation in our thought process that allowed us to be capable of creative thought and making art. But researchers, another team of researchers, not the shell folks, another team of researchers is looking at cave art in Indonesia that they thought it had never been dated. And they thought, yeah, it's about 10,000 years old, not much older because, well, you know, humidity and stuff, it wouldn't have survived. They finally found a way to date it, and they realized, oh, my gosh, this stuff is 35 to 40,000 years old. So it's actually older than the oldest cave art we know of in France. It's the oldest cave art they've seen, and it's all the way in Indonesia, which tells you that there were ancestors of ours running around all over the world, perfectly capable of making some decent cave art way earlier than we thought.
Right, so the creative brain existed way earlier in our family tree than we previously thought, maybe.
Yeah, and you know, there's been a long debate about where did this creative brain arise, and you know, it's kind of the bias that for researchers for many, many years were coming mostly out of Europe, and they thought, oh, it was in Europe that the creative brain arose. But now they're starting to think, you know, it is very possible that the creative brain concept arose in Africa way earlier than we ever believed, and then all of the early humans who left Africa took that creative process with them, whether they went to Europe or Indonesia or who knows where.
And we're going to move on. Finally, Discover has a feature about haptic screens. First off, what are haptic screens?
Okay, haptic technology is just so cool. Let me just state that, okay? That's top of the theme there. Basically, haptic screens create the sensation of texture, and they're doing it by varying electric fields on a touch screen. So when you swipe across your screen, you know, whether you're looking at stuff to buy at Home Depot or on Tinder or whatever, I don't judge, you feel that smooth surface. The haptic screens alter the electrical field that your finger's going over so that it's not just a swipe. Maybe it feels bumpy or super smooth or weirdly textured like snow on a windshield. So they're experimenting with all different ways of creating texture on what's actually a smooth screen that you touch.
Is this something geared toward people with, at least at first, with visual impairments to give them a more interesting screen experience?
Well, there's a whole range of applications that they're looking at. And I would say that, you know, probably the biggest, most exciting news is for folks who are blind or visually impaired. When you think of, you know, say a child who's visually impaired trying to take a standardized test and trying to, say, select an answer based on a map or a graph. Those things are super hard to represent, but if they could actually run their fingers over a touch screen and really feel the contours of topography or whatever, that is just, it's a game changer. It's going to make things so much easier for them to understand. So a lot of the applications are for the blind and visually impaired, but researchers are saying, hey, if you want to buy, say, a shirt online and you want to feel the fabric, you could actually feel it on your screen. Or if you're talking on Skype and, you know, you're talking to your mom and you want to give her a bouquet of roses, she could actually reach out and feel what the rose petals would feel like. So there are tons of applications, and it's a pretty exciting field.
All right. Sounds pretty cool. You were right, Gemma. Thanks a lot for filling us in.
All right. Always great to talk to you. Thank you.
That was Gemma Tarlak, Senior Associate Editor at Discover Magazine, based in Waukesha. She joins us once a month to take a look behind the headlines in the science world.